Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
How about that inflation report? Boy, oh boy, this election is going to be a complicated election. Lots of different winds blowing, lots of different currents looking to carry things one way or the other. But the fundamentals of what people generally vote on are not good for the incumbent. Joe Biden has a bad economy on his hands, has inflation, which is just, it's just the worst thing that happens economically, because we all understand our money to have less power. And that is something that would normally always, it seems, make it tough for a president to get reelected. But then you've got the unknowns with Trump and what happens with these court cases and what kind of rulings might go against him and how those might influence voters. And there's just no feeling out there that's clear in terms of which way this election might it might roll. We just don't have the evidence yet, I think. And a lot of things haven't solidified yet. But the fact that the economy, while it's cranking on some levels, it's also abusing regular working people on lots of levels. And inflation is the source of that abuse, the primary source, along with big government, which causes the inflation, but it also causes a sense of oppressiveness and sucks the vibrance out of the world that we're used to feeling. We're used to feeling excited. Tough to be excited right now when you're being oppressed economically and when the inflationary effect is just reminding you all the time. You go to the store and you spend your, you get your $100 worth of stuff and it costs you $135. That's not good. That's not good. You feel that. You remember that. And it's amazing how long those memories stay along. It is. You remember carrying more bags for the same amount of money. 860-522-9842, rant line number 751-4698. Time for us to check in with Mark Christopher and see what's happening on the roads, the BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. Marcus.
It's Todd Feinberg. It's Todd Feinberg. Monday through Friday, 3 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
860-522-9842. All right, Mike in Plainville, what's going on? What's on your mind?
The wiser people in this world have adjusted, made adjustments. Let's go back 5 years before COVID. People had, prices were down, more people were working. You could go and afford to buy steaks and the good stuff. Now it's a little pricey. So what you have to do is make adjustments. What did UConn do Monday night to win that game? They made adjustments on their defense. They let the big guy inside for Purdue score as many points as he wanted to, but they D'd up on the outside scores, and that's what won them the game. They won by 15. Just by doing that, you have to do that in life. You have to cut back. Improvise.
And we do, but the trouble is government doesn't make adjustments. It forces us to make adjustments, and those are all penalties. Those are all bad adjustments we have to make.
Here's the thing, but there's not a damn thing right now at this moment that I can do about it, so I have to live with it, and I have to do the best I can.
That's true.
What's my alternative?
Your alternative is to lose the game.
I'm not going to lose.
Well, there you go. And that's why. That's because you're going to take the big guy, and every time he tries to go up for a shot, you're going to kick him in the knee.
I tried. I fouled out in numerous games, so I can understand.
All right, Mike. Thank you for the call, sir.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you again soon. Okay, I'm dying to play this thing. I've got to play this thing. Listen to this. This is a writer. I forget what her background is. I do. It's Abigail Schreier is the writer, and her book is called Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up. And she's talking here with Coleman Hughes, who's the host of a podcast. Wonderful young podcaster, really smart guy. And listen to this first segment. The concepts here, I think, speak for themselves. But we will speak for them as well. Hang on one sec. Just trying to make it work. All right. I think I've got it. Here we go.
Well, with psychotherapy, of course, it can be helpful, but it also carries risks. A lot of people don't realize that. And what you just said, your therapist casually diagnosing you with PTSD, which is, by the way, on its face, absurd.
Yeah.
Because PTSD is a severe condition. People have these absolute...
I blew it because I didn't start it from the beginning. I'm going to go back to the beginning.
He actually diagnosed me with PTSD.
And that happens all the time. And with children, it's called demoralization. That's one of the iatrogenic effects of therapy. So I talk about...
Okay, two important words there. Iatrogenic and iatrogenesis. It has to do with the idea that you hear an idea expressed to you by a professional, like you have cancer or you have anxiety, and that becomes a part of your perception of yourself because of the impact of that professional person telling you something about yourself. Okay, and then what was the second idea? Do you remember?
It's the therapy. So I talk about in the book iatrogenesis, which is when a healer...
No, I didn't. I got to go back a little
and
bit.
It's called demoralization.
That's demoralization. I love that word. Demoralization is an aspect of or a manifestation of this larger concept that she's talking about.
And it's called demoralization. That's one of the iatrogenic effects of therapy. So I talk about in the book iatrogenesis, which is when a healer introduces harm to the patient. Mm. And harm can come in any number of ways. You know, you go in for a surgery and you pick up a MRSA infection, or you go in for an X-ray and you're exposed to, radiation. So even helpful interventions carry risk, right? Well, with psychotherapy, of course, it can be helpful, but it also carries risks. A lot of people don't realize that. And what you just said, your therapist casually diagnosing you with PTSD, which is, by the way, on its face, absurd.
Yeah.
Because PTSD is a severe condition. People have these absolutely serious, symptoms like, these flashbacks in which they are truly disoriented. They believe they're back in the combat experience.
Yeah, we've all heard those stories about how severe PTSD is. So the point she's making is that Coleman Hughes, the young guy who's the podcaster she's talking to, he's telling about when his mother died when he was 18. It was the first trauma he'd had, and he was a perfectly happy guy until then. And his mother died, and he went into anxiety and depression and felt terrible for a couple of years. And then was doing therapy once a week, that 50-minute thing once a week. And the therapist, after some period of time, told him that he had PTSD. And she's saying that that's a diagnosis that comes with dramatic repercussions after a dramatic trauma. And maybe just your mother dying of cancer isn't enough to cause that kind of trauma, or maybe it is, but it seems a little easy, perhaps, and maybe manipulative for a therapist working unsupervised in a one-on-one private way to diagnose somebody with PTSD because they lost their mother without feeling a responsibility to not be tagging somebody with a demoralizing diagnosis. I think that's really important because I see that in our politics. And that's one of the things I want to talk about today, because I think that's a really powerful issue. 860-522-9842. Ken in Tolland. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you?
What's up?
I want to bring to the attention of all the people that live in Tolland. Mm-hmm. They have a town manager and a few of his buddies that for some reason they want to kick out a person who for 15 years for free has trying to keep the historical green in place and do different things in Tolland. And it seems like, I think there was a thing in Windsor Locks or something about a town manager. But
no, that was, we covered that extensively here. Yeah. That was in Enfield. Yeah. Yes.
Well, you have another little deal with this guy.
So this is a problem with the town manager, you're saying?
Yes, and there's six people that sit with him. You know, no matter what you say to him, as a town taxpayer, they just look the other way and they make their own decisions.
And what is their idea for this town green that's been there forever?
Well, they want to put for $500,000 a sidewalk down the middle of it when there's already a sidewalk for 300 years on each side of it for one person. No offense to that person. I've had my medical problems, but she could move tomorrow.
Where's the money coming from for this project, do you know?
Well, the taxpayers.
No, specifically, because my guess is already that this is being driven by available money in the form of a grant from either the state or the federal government. And usually it's coming from the federal government either directly or indirectly. And that's the problem, is the creation of the money, and that makes them do bad things.
Negative. It's coming from the taxpayers.
Well, everything I described is the taxpayers, but through what mechanism? Are you saying it's town, like Tolland alone is going to pay for this?
Yes, definitely. And for 15 years, a person has done a lot of work for the Historical Society and the Green. They do not want to give any money to put into a 200-year-old jail on the green, but they want to spend $500,000, put a stupid sidewalk down through there. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And these people are like, I don't know, almost dictators.
Wait a sec. This is, so I'm looking it up, and I see a story saying back in September this was approved. Tolland approved sidewalk making historic green more accessible amid dissent from preservationists.
Yeah.
Okay, so preservationists are usually pretty good at these fights, and that's a really lovely green. And the idea of turning the green another color doesn't seem like a great concept.
You're absolutely right. There's a sidewalk that's 200 and something years old on each side of that green. There's no reason to waste $500,000 when they don't want to keep up the old jail in town, you know, right on the green. It's just like certain people make these decisions, and no matter what you do, it's ridiculous. You know, this is the democracy.
So this is interesting. Members of the Historic District Commission have said that the green is already compliant with the ADA because it has the right number of access points. So who is the person? Where is the fight right now? Who's fighting? Is it the Commission on the People with Disabilities pushing, fighting this right now, or what? The Historical Society? Who's driving this fight?
The town manager and his four or five buddies up there.
No, I know. I know Brian Foley, the town manager, is the driver of this. But who's fighting him?
The Historical Society. The Green, you know, Historical Society, they're fighting it.
Okay. Do you know a person who I maybe could get on the air?
Pardon me?
Do you know a person who I might be able to get on the air and tell us about the fight?
Well, there's a lady named Jody that maybe she'll call you. I don't know. But it's like they don't like her because she sticks up for right.
Jody Bush Barassa?
they're like a Putin regime there or something, you know?
Is it Jody Barrasa? Do you know? Does that name ring a bell?
Who?
Jody Barrasa?
No, Marziello.
Jody Marziello. Oh, I'm sorry.
They've lived there on the green for 25 years. For 15 years, she's tried to preserve the green, but the town manager and a few of his buddies, I guess they make the decisions here. And it doesn't.
Well, they try until they get into trouble. So when are they starting work? What's the deal?
I'm not sure when they're starting work, but now they want to kick her out of being the historical green, you know, person for 15 years because they don't like her pushing back on what they decide.
I can't believe they haven't reached out to me. I'm so glad you did. What caused you to call? Because you heard the Enfield conversation?
Well, because I moved from Willington, where I was in the Historical Society. I lived there 47 years. 3 years ago, I bought a house in town, and I can't believe it's not right. It's not right. Who are these people to make decisions for everyone in Talons?
Okay, as soon as we break at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to send Jody an email. I've got her address, I believe.
Okay.
She's a lawyer? Do you know her to be a lawyer?
She's not a lawyer. We're not lawyers. We're taxpayer.
Taxpayers are lawyers. Lawyers, you know, that's a legitimate job. Don't be putting down the poor law profession. So,
I'm just saying we're average people that pay taxes in town, and somebody making these decisions, it's not right.
Okay, not I'm right. just trying to find the right person to reach out to, and I thought I had, because I looked up Jody, and I found her name, and I found a Marziello law firm that there's an email for.
No.
Can't be her.
Marziello, Marziello. Jody. She's been doing this for 15 years.
Head of the commission.
But all of a sudden, this guy and his buddies are up on the stand. They make their own decisions. So
there's a meeting tomorrow night.
There's a meeting tomorrow night at 6:30.
And what's going to be decided tomorrow night at 6:30?
Yes.
This is the final decision on this is happening tomorrow night?
No.
Yeah. Well, there's a decision like they want to kick her out because they don't agree with her.
But kick her out of what is she? What is she on? The Historical Society?
Historical Commission.
Okay. So that's a town board, eh? Okay. I'm going to reach out to her and see if I can make progress. It sounds like it may be too late to stop the bad guys, but either way, we need to make them pay for being bad guys there's a chance to do that, if they can't be stopped from actually doing the bad thing.
It's just not right. You know, this is a democracy, and 5 or 10 people shouldn't make all these rules for the town of Talon.
This is the thing with government today. They expect people to get out of the way, to accept not knowing what's going on and being oppressed and being pummeled and intimidated and lied to and covered up. And this is just how government works. We've got to straighten it out. So I'm so glad you called, Ken. And if you would send me an email, I would appreciate it. Todd@toddtalk.com, just so we can be in touch. And I will reach out to her and find out what I can find out from Jody Marziello.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
WTIC, Fred of Middletown is here. What's up, Fred?
Hey, a few quick things. This is the Kvetch line, I take it. So a diagnosis is one step closer to a prescription. And PTSD, that's not all that, like, disgraceful or shameful. But I think that gives you a legal status, you know, like if you want to get a gun and different things like that. So, yeah, I don't think you want – I heard someone saying that recently. You don't want a PTSD diagnosis on your record, you know.
Yes, that would not be somebody you'd want to hand a weapon to.
Well, no, but I mean, the way they're dishing it out now, as you're saying, you know, you're sad and they give you this. Everything has a diagnosis. I've told this story before. I know some woman, you know, you're a little bit sad, whatever, you want to talk to someone, and they got a pencil out and they're writing pen out and they're writing you a prescription. It's just ridiculous. They're just on point, like sales reps for the pharma companies, you know, your average doctor you're going to go to. That is fascinating, though, about that diagnosis thing in a closing point. Someone pointed out to me that you see this phenomenon where someone's going along, they get a diagnosis, and then they die of it in a pretty quick minute, you know? So,
meaning the diagnosis can be correct.
Well, no, the time it was like...
mind over matter.
Yeah, the expert told them.
Yes.
You know, and how many people have outlived the doctor that gave them 6 months?
Well, hang on, Fred, because the real point she's making, because her book is about young people going to therapists who are not necessarily experts, say, in things like sexual, whatever that thing's called with the... You know, everybody's, all the young kids. The dysphoria. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
So she's thinking about the idea, the power of suggestion when you're dealing with an 11-year-old girl and she's being told she has a thing called dysphoria, and then how the family gets on board because they're also into having a psychologist telling them what's wrong with their kid, and they don't realize how they're being dragged down a street by the power of those words and the prestige of the people saying them.
And the next thing you know, never mind a prescription, we're talking a procedure, right? A diagnosis, a prescription, a procedure, yeah. I said on the Shattuck Show the other day, don't get between a man with a knife and $50,000. In other words, you can confuse teenagers. You know? All right.
He will cut through anything standing between him and that money.
Yeah. He'll have someone move you out of the way, man, and put you under psychiatric care.
Yeah, really quick. Thank you, Fred. 860-522-9842. The rant line number, 860-751-4698. Joe Markley coming up next. BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. We've got Mark Christopher standing by. Mark.
Listen to the Todd Feinberg Show on the free Odyssey app. Download and like WTIC and follow Todd Feinberg today.
All right, I'm busy sending off emails. This is so much fun. Right now I'm doing one to the town manager in Tallinn to see if he wants to come on the air and talk about his plan to pave the town green. Joe Markley is here, former state senator and current aficionado of the sun being blocked by the tiny little moon. It's amazing that tiny little moon has the power to box out somebody as big as the sun. Were you amazed by that, Joe, as the big basketball fan that you are?
One of the strangest coincidences in our natural world is the fact that the apparent size in the sky of the sun and the moon is essentially identical. If you think of it, you've got two different factors. One is the actual size of the object. And, of course, the sun is enormously bigger than the moon.
400 times bigger than the moon.
And the other is the distance from Earth to those two objects. And obviously, again,
the sun is 400 times closer. The sun is 400 times further away as well, I understand.
And what's the odds that those two things would work in such a way that the sun, that when the moon passes in front of the sun, it just barely blocks it? Because if the moon were a little smaller or a little further away, you'd never have a total eclipse.
And the whole business of the eclipse business would be shot.
The eclipse business would be over, that's right. And in fact, it will be at some point, because these things are moving around. The moon is moving a little further away each year.
Is it ever coming back?
Yes, it's going to keep moving away for a little while, and then it's going to start moving closer. And it's also going to have the effect over time of slowing down the rotation of the Earth until at some point in the, you know, in
we'll be able to get off
or whatever, the Earth will face the moon, and basically a month and a day will be the same length as the Earth just looks at the moon all day long. But anyway, at the moment, we get to enjoy this phenomena of an eclipse, which I've seen twice now. I went out to Wyoming back in 2017, and it was spectacular in Wyoming. And I was out in Arizona on Monday, and it was spectacular. They're very rather different eclipses. It was that I haven't seen anyone explain yet, but the actual experience of the eclipse was quite different in the two events.
Were you at a similar location in terms of the type of eclipse you were being, the original structural stimulus of what was going on in the sky was the same in both places?
Pretty similar. And I was in both cases, I was in a state park, and it was very nice that way. I think the difference maybe always, of course, the moon and the sun, their relative sizes are not the same in each eclipse. And I think that in the eclipse I saw out in Wyoming, you had much more of a sense of the corona of the sun, you know, this kind of solar atmosphere that you could see out around the moon. Whereas with this eclipse, one was much more aware of actually the flames of the sun kind of poking around the edges of the moon, and not the corona so much. It wasn't as dark, this eclipse, as the one that I saw out in Wyoming either. Mm-hmm. It's a spectacular thing. I almost hate to talk about it because it's behind us now, and there won't be another one in North America for 20 years.
Well, that's all right. There's plenty of studying people can do, and they might want to invite you on a trip to Spain to see the next one.
Well, I will be in Spain for the next one if the Lord is willing to spare me and protect me. And Spain's a great place to be. It's a place I like to be, eclipse or no eclipse. So it's a good excuse to go there. But a great experience. I was glad to have had it, and I'm glad I'm back here talking to you again.
All right. So you usually are fired up also about something that you may have heard over the airwaves. So is there anything that you wanted to mention about what we were talking about?
Since you ask, you were just getting into this very interesting topic about demoralization and the notion that we live in a society in which people are being told that they have problems that make them, that disadvantage them, that they get dependent one way or another. And I think one of the problems we have with psychological treatment is that once you have generations of people that have been accustomed to treatment, If the parents believe that they need drugs in order to maintain an equilibrium, it's very likely they're going to see the same problems come up in their kid. It's not that I'm not unsympathetic, obviously, and I'm not convinced that all of this is misguided, although I think an awful lot of it is misguided in terms of the kinds of drug treatments and even the kinds of therapy that are available. But I do think it's something that politically feeds into this notion we have now of equity, that it's not enough that people have an equal chance, because so many people believe that they have some inherent problem that's holding them back, whether it's race on one side, which is, of course, the great political shibboleth now, or whether it's these kinds of psychological problems. So everybody, or lots of people, are looking for somebody, and somebody usually becomes the government, unfortunately, somebody to put their thumb on the scale to make everything right for them. And it's just the wrong way to think about it. It's interesting because I'm going to give a speech on Saturday for the Coventry Republican Town Committee, their Lincoln Day dinner is on Saturday, and I'm giving a speech about Lincoln, but it gives me the chance to talk about the concept of equality and the fact that it's the Republican Party since the days of Lincoln that has stood up for equality. In those days, it was a Democratic Party that said that whites and blacks simply weren't equal. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans went back to the Declaration and said all men are created equal and have inalienable rights. And the Republicans fought the Democrats for 100 years with the Democrats as the racist party that said the blacks had to be kept down. And that was true not just during the Civil War and after the Civil War and through the Jim Crow period, but all the time in the early 20th century. The worst racists, from Woodrow Wilson to Ben Tillman to George Wallace, were all Democrats. Now the Democratic Party has flipped. It's still obsessed with race, but now it's saying, no, we've got to be racist in the other direction. Being the party that had tried to hold blacks down for 100 years, now we're going to be the party that tries to elevate them. And the Republicans have to remain the party that says all men are created equal, period. There's nothing more to be said about this. All of them have certain inalienable rights, not an infinite number of inalienable rights, but certain inalienable rights which have to be protected. And beyond that, everyone's got to take their own chances. Nobody actually is equal, but everyone. It's like buying a lottery ticket. You got your chance, and now what are you going to do with it?
But if you go back to this idea of having an authority figure, a professional person, diagnose you and give you a label, and that has a certain power to demoralize you, to put you in a box. That might feel kind of good to you because suddenly you've got excuses for everything and you are excused for living off the whatever the program is that's available for somebody with your diagnosis. It's so insidious. It's like a Dr. Evil character was sitting around, curling his mustache, thinking of how wonderful this would be, this kind of approach in indoctrinating people into the idea of victimhood and the need for a government which is well outside the bounds of what a legitimate government is supposed to do in our society.
Yeah, it's a government that is supposed to make everything right for everybody. And the things that it needs to make right are things that are no longer under a person's own control, but become under the government's control. I think a lot of this, it goes back even as so far as to say that addiction is a disease. There's no question in my mind, and I've known enough people that have addictions, that there's a predilection towards it, and it gets a grip on you, and I can understand a certain way in which you can say it's a disease, but to put it in the same category as a diagnosis of cancer or diabetes or whatever, it's not healthy for the person herself. Who has to try to find a way to get past that addiction.
Who has to find inner resources and resolve to push past it. And the diagnosis of calling it a disease, as if you could just be innocently taking a walk in the park and you breathed in a germ that you didn't know existed that gave you that problem of heroin addiction, say, or alcoholism, what have you. That takes it out of your hands and turns you into a total victim.
Yeah, these are things that need to have, if you say people need to be ashamed of to some extent, but that's one thing that I think you learn early on with something like drinking is you wake up in the morning and say, I feel awful and oh my goodness, what did I do last night? And I gotta stop doing that, you know, not to say, I guess I need to go to a doctor and get treated for an addiction. I've got to mend my ways. Now, it's easier for some people than others. And that's true of everything in life. But it doesn't let anyone off the hook. We all have to take responsibility for our own actions. And I really do feel like we're on this earth to do that, to take responsibility.
Well,
and to find a way to live as well as we can.
The other way to look at it, not from this responsibility point of view, but the fact is that life is a process of bumping into things and learning that certain moves you make are going to result in certain causes of pain, and you have to adjust your behavior as you go through life. And this starts with a little kid crawling under the coffee table and then lifting his head up and banging it and screaming out in pain. And how many times they have to do that before they learn the lesson? And this is continuous. It goes throughout our lives. We're adjusting to the friction that gets created as we move through the outside world. And that is our most important skill and the one that decides what we're going to bring to the table for ourselves.
That's right. And this is one of the reasons that I think age, which we've come to fear and I think disrespect in some ways, ought to be something that's celebrated, because age ought to make us smarter and stronger and clearer thinking and better behaved. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no reason that it's ridiculous if, as the years go by, we're only behaving worse and worse. We ought to be able to see what we're doing wrong and figure out a way to avoid it, not succumb to it, which I think is too often the case. And we ought to celebrate the kind of the victory of age in overcoming our passions, in learning self-control, and finding a way to be helpful to other people and an example to other people. And unfortunately, we're turning into a kind of a youth culture where everybody is seen as a Grandpa Simpson out, yelling at a cloud or saying, "Get off my lawn." And the idea that an older person may have wisdom of experience to share almost seems laughable, I think, to young people now.
I don't know if that's true anymore. Have you talked to young people? Because I look at young people growing up, and they tend to be, if they were born to parents, they might be the only child born to those parents living in the same household, if they get to live in the same household with those parents, and which we can't assume. But it's a different experience, and I feel like young people grow up way more mature. They're not shoved off with all the kids, because there aren't all the kids anymore. They're going out to dinner with the parents, and they're hanging around with the parents and going to the movies with the parents, and the parents are driving them everywhere in their lives. It's a whole different upbringing.
Yeah, I suppose that's true, but I don't know, do you think that makes them more respectful of the parents, or does that make them more familiar and less respectful?
I think it makes them feel more connected, and that there's a need there, that these are the people they depend on in their lives, and these are the people they have in their lives, because they don't have young people up in abundance in their lives.
Yeah, I hope you're right in a sense. I do think that it's true that the fellowship of childhood, I think, is much less present. You know, I kind of grew up in a world, and I think most of us did, in the cities and the suburbs both, where, you know, your hours from the time you went to school and you were with your friends at school and after school let off, really until dinner time anyways, you were just out playing. You were out in the neighborhood, and that was what your life. You had a social circle, and you kind of learned how to deal with a social circle when you were, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 years old, because there was a pecking order and there were tensions and friends and enemies and everything else. And I think a lot of that is now gone in a more structured, more controlled kind of relationships between kids.
Yeah, it's a very different world. That is for sure. Joe Markley, it's always fun to talk, and this was a good one. And congratulations on your trip out to see the big pie in the sky and the eclipse of it.
Well, anyone who missed it, honestly, good excuse to go to Spain in 2 years.
Happens all the time, these eclipses, as long as you've got money for a plane ticket.
Yeah, you can stay cheap in Spain still. What a great country. Very good, Todd. Take care.
Thank you, Joe. That's Joe Markley. And we have more radio coming your way. All right. As a matter of fact, it's always going, our radio. And we're going to show you right now with Mark Christopher, BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. We're going to take a look at the roads now, Mark.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.